Welcome back, everybody. Happy Monday. Yes, yes, this is the Pinball Cool Stuff Podcast. Getting back into our roots here in this Honda Civic studio. I didn't realize it, but I was listening back, because I don't edit the show, I was listening back to the show a couple weeks ago, and the volume's all messed up, so I'm really sorry. I had no idea that there was so much echo and music echo in that in those pods, so that's my bad. So I'm going to do my very best to make it into the Civic, here where there's sound protection, no echoes, just the right kind of background music and tone, and a perfect experience for a podcast. Sitting in the parking lot of a Costco here in San Marcos, California on this wonderful April 26, 2021 day. My name is Ian Rodriguez and this is the Pinball and Cool Stuff Podcast. We had the weekend miniature arcade expo. Okay, museum opened up 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. on Saturday. We took the kids out there. It was super fun. There was like 250 people there, probably somewhere in there. It was a very pricey event for one day, $150, and it was really, really, really cool. So I teched for 3-4 hours, and I played with the kids for another 3-4 hours, and my girlfriend came. It was really fun. I hope you went. If you didn't, I'm not sure when they're going to be open next. That's another one of my notes, but the event on Saturday was really, really good. It was delicious food, great to see the museum turn back on, and I'm just motivated to see what's next. So they had some new stuff at the museum, really, really cool, some stuff I'd never seen, certainly not at the museum. They had Oktoberfest, which they never owned prior to about a month ago, which was, you know, I was going to look at one to buy, and I'm not going to say I'm glad I didn't. If I could get that game for $6,000, I'd think about buying it. I played Oktoberfest for the first time, and I think the art is lacking, like everybody's saying. The experience of playing it is really, really rich. So Oktoberfest just needs a retheme, maybe, to make it a really, really neat game. Let's just say it plays better than, I don't know, probably any Balser game I've played. Better than any Balser game, maybe, except for Simpsons. I think that's probably Balser's best playing game, but Oktoberfest is certainly the best playing game he's designed, unless Simpsons is number one. So it plays really well. It's very fun, very deep shots, very shallow shots, lots of variety. And I really love the way it feels when you're playing it. The side ramp is a problem, but we've already discussed that. It can be fixed with the hardware, I think, the mod that they send from American Pinball. So that was my first time playing it. I'm really happy I did. It was a nice experience figuring out, you know, what that game's all about. So I think it's really deep, too, as far as code. There's a lot of game modes, and there's a lot of interesting things, you know, like the one flipper, or the right flipper only, like beer drinking mode, stuff like that. Very, very quirky, very campy, very interesting. It's just not your typical game. So for that, I'm grateful. They went off sort of off the beaten path with the design of the game and the coding, which is a nice, refreshing departure from, you know, your basic mode achievement type of game. It's just different. So Oktoberfest, pretty neat. We were playing, the kids couldn't get enough of this little sit-down driver game, like a SpongeBob one, so thinking about putting a sit-down driver in the Pintopia arcade pretty soon. We'll see if I can get my hands on a Cruisin' USA or a Fast and Furious game. Should be fun. The kids just can't stop driving. They love that feeling, and I remember when I was that young, I certainly did too, sitting down and driving a Cruisin' USA machine was a thrill unlike any other. I think you all agree. Nothing like it. So yeah, we'll see about that. But the kids really played more video games than pinballs, even though the arcade side wasn't open. So they had a little mini arcade out there in the little kids' room near the pinball collection, and they stayed in there for the vast majority of the afternoon. It was fun to see them have so much fun. I just wish we could have got them on more pinballs, but maybe that day will come. Maybe that day will come. Next time I go to the museum, it will be kid-free, though. It'll be me and Lindsay, or just me. I can tell you that, because it was a lot of work making sure those kids are all right. So next time I'm going to play some more, watch some kids less. That's the deal. My son was really dying to play Dialed In, and he really played it well, and he was very thrilled to play it. That game has a lot of features which catch the eye. So that's little Buck's favorite game. And I don't blame him. It's an exceptional game. You put it next to Wonka, though, and I think Wonka is just more of a showpiece. So I still love my Wonka. Who knows? If I can get it dialed in for a good deal, I'll pull the trigger. They don't have Guns N' Roses CE at the museum, and they're not going to get it. I understand from the curator of the museum, Chuck, said they were unable to order one. So maybe they'll have to pick one up for 25 grand. Maybe. I don't know. I'd probably trade the Pirates CE for the Guns N' Roses straight up if I was a museum. But it's not my decision to make. So, new games. They have GoldenEye at the museum now. That was a game I've never played, and I certainly have never seen on location. It's a really, really good layout by Sega. 1998, I think, the game released. It's, of course, the Pierce Brosnan GoldenEye. Really interesting art. Not bad at all. Pretty nice hand-drawn. Some Photoshop in there, too, but the playfield looked really brilliant. The shots are really interesting and really fun. Really, really fun game. It's a Sega top for sure, like top five. There's quite a few good Sega games, but definitely interesting and fun. Apollo 13 was also there, first time I'd seen it. Didn't achieve the 13 ball multi-ball, but I was glad to see it in the collection. I'm going to get more games on it in the coming months if we can tech out there soon. So we got those. Sharky's Shootout, which is a game by Stern, which I understand was a reskin of Space Jam, is at the museum now too. Wait, is it Sharky Shootout? It was, right. So Sharky Shootout, really fun game, really interesting layout, fun, fast shots, the pool theme, of course, with that that beautiful dark-haired lady on the front. Interesting, fun game. They had Big House by Gottlieb, which was interesting. People, that one's kind of rare. It gets kind of a mixed rap, but it was a good game for its time. Let me just put it that way. The sounds are good. The art's fun. It's a cool theme. I think it was a really well thought out game, especially considering the era in which it was released. I think it's an exceptional title and very rare. They have the Mario game by Gottlieb. I think they used to have it and then it disappeared and now we got it back. And I never played it because it never worked. But now they have it and it works and it's a fun game. So Mario Brothers by Gottlieb might be top three Gottlieb ever released. That's not saying a whole lot, but I still like Gottliebs. I think they have their place and they're acceptable as a good collector's piece. And there's a few of them that are really, really stand out. Mario's definitely one of the few. They also got a Stern NBA, which I think it's a reskin of Space Jam. That's what people were telling me. So Stern has the NBA game. I don't know how many were made, but I've never seen it before, ever. I've only heard about it, and they have it now at the museum, so that's cool. There's probably 5 or 10 more that I just forgot, so I was just kind of going off of memory today during my note gathering. Of course, the Alien by Highway is out of commission at the museum, so you can play that. Big Lebowski's still running strong, though, so good for Dutch. They made a game that has some last ability, I think. It's durable. I've only seen it down for maybe 3 months out of the time we've had it there. So Lebowski lives. Slam Tilt podcast was talking about the Museum of Pinball, about the expansion that the museum's undergoing that was based on an article in the Palm Desert News or something like that. Evidently, the rumor is now out and people know. So it's a 75,000 square foot building with a million parking spots right next to the airport, Palm Desert. They're calling it the West Coast Pinburg, and people on Pinside are starting to chat about it. It's going to be really, really cool. They acknowledge that the Museum of Pinball has the rarest of the rare collections. And so you'll listen to it quickly. They talk about the Zachariah and the Spooky lineup that they have, about how nobody has those games in one spot. And it's certainly true. It's the rarest games, and it's really neat to see them all in one spot. So happy to be a part of it. Cannot wait for the new expansion. Cannot wait for them to increase their opening hours to the public. I understand it may be 3 days a week for good, so I don't know how that's going to happen, but I'm definitely going to go if that happens. That's going to be fun. So the big news today on TWIP, everybody, this week in pinball, was the publisher of the Haggis remake announcement. So Haggis is remaking, of course, Fathom. HaggisPinball.com if you need to go look, or thisweekinpinball.com. They've got two editions, the Mermaid LE edition for $11,500 Australian dollars, or the standard for $9,500 Australian dollars. The game itself does look fantastic. It looks really nice. A very beautiful reproduction, kind of like Chicago would do, Chicago Gaming. And they licensed it from Planetary, same as Chicago Gaming does for this title. I think it's the start of something special. People are talking about how this is going to be the new direction of Haggis, and I really do hope it is. But I think people have already talked about it. I know I have, about these remakes of older titles like Sea Witch, Fathom, Centaur, what have you, where you're talking about either a reskin of that playfield or just the remake of the same game, like Fathom or like Sea Witch, if that does get remade. For $9,500 Australian, I think that would come out to maybe $6,000 American. So $6,000 price of a Stern Pro Nguyen box for a remake of a single level game with three flippers like Fathom. It would have to be like your grail pin for a game you used to love when you were a kid. I couldn't justify it because of the features offered by the game. So I like those beautiful remakes. I like refurbished old games. I got my own finally. But man, to pay $6,000 for an old title with very few features and a very shallow rule set, you got to be committed, man. That takes a lot. So everybody's saying it is way too expensive to justify purchase. And let me just jump on the bad bandwagon of that consensus right now. But I'm really happy they're doing it because the games are beautiful. They're really well done. So congrats to Haggis. You're going to find collectors out there who will pay that. And I bet they don't really need to sell a ton to make their margin and their money there. So they'll probably sell 300, 250 LEs, and maybe 100 standards. Who knows? But the idea is they don't have some gigantic operation where they have to sell 1,000 games in order to sort of stay afloat. So that's nice. Good for them. All right, moving on. So the... let's see. I was looking at this Pinside thread today, actually. Looking at this Pinside thread about which games got people into pinball when they were younger. And I chimed in about Gilligan's Island at my friend's house and the Addams Family at the arcade that I used to love and go to. And Terminator 2, Pinbot, Indiana Jones at Mulligan's and all those things. It was really interesting to see that a lot of the people on Pinside were talking about modern Sterns being their sort of entry point or re-entry point for pinball in their lives. It's incredible. So the perspective is, of course, that I play games from the 90s and 80s. And a lot of these people are next, I guess, first-gen pinballers, I guess, maybe, where they just started playing in the 2010 era, 2010 and beyond. So I'm really happy to see the response out there that it's not just a bunch of 80s and 90s players. There's a bunch of people who literally hadn't even seen a pinball game or played one, at least not significantly, until after 2010. So that's kind of cool. That's a really cool, it's just a funny demographic reveal by the Pinside thread. It's kind of an interesting topic to talk about. But I'm curious, if you must have all a game that you remember playing that really got you hooked on pinball. And if you're in the 90s, I bet you it was something like Terminator 2, maybe Firepower in the 80s, something like that. Because those games rocked. Those games were ahead of their time. And we all appreciate them. So Kaneda's coming out with the Mandalorian spoiler, if you want to call it that, from Stern. So Mandalorian's the next title from Stern. It's going to be released in a week or so. Brian Eddy and not Zombie Eddy. So it's not Zombie Eddy. It's not Johnny Crap. It's not Chris Franchi. So I think it's going to be Fernandez. I think it's his name. The comic book artist from Star Wars a year ago. I think it's going to be that gentleman for Stern. It would fit. He's good. He knows the theme, he knows the license, he's their guy, he's Stern's guy now too. That makes sense. So it's going to be that guy with the comic art. I would bet my house on it. So Brian Eddy needs a hit, but let's talk about the theme. Mandalorian, obviously it's not a movie, it's not a band, so they lived up to the rumor there. It's a TV show, and I'm just a little heartbroken it wasn't Cobra Kai, because that might have been a buy for me. But moving on to the theme. So Mandalorian, I've never seen a single episode. I haven't watched anything Star Wars since I watched the first three Star Wars movies maybe 3 or 4 years ago. I watched the original Star Wars movies. And that was the first time I'd ever seen them to that point. So I waited 33 years to watch the first three Star Wars that were released in the 70s. And, you know, it doesn't light my fire. So I know there's a lot of Star Wars junkies out there, so good for you. I hope you love it. But this is a theme that doesn't matter to me. That kind of dovetails into my next topic, though. So is theme going to be the thing that gets you in or keeps you out of a game? And I'm going to argue that it doesn't for players like me. And there's a lot of players like me that they just want a fun game, good lights, good art, and an interesting game that stays interesting. Not, like, who cares about the theme? Why am I making this sort of argument? Let's think about what's happened in the past 10 years. Stern is theme, theme, theme all day long. But who are their designers? They have Elwin, they have Brian Eddy, they have John Borg, they have George Gomez. Let's talk about their best designer, Elwin. I know for a fact there's people on Pinside and people in our community who would buy any Elwin game because it's Keith Elwin. I think that goes beyond, it's not arguable at this point. Keith Elwin's a proven designer, I've already talked about it. He's their best. People will buy Elwin games if it's Barney as a theme. People will buy Elwin games if it's the Teletubbies as a theme. They don't give a crap, and I'm one of them. So layout and design is just kind of the thing. I don't care the theme. I don't think I'm alone. I hope you guys are in the same sort of school of thought, because I think, I'm not saying theme doesn't matter, but what I am saying is it doesn't matter to people who just love a fantastic playing game with a decent art and sound package. So let's go down the list. Lawler, same deal. Anybody who loves Lawler like I do will care about his release no matter what the theme is. I watched Toy Story like twice. I think it's a really fun little movie. My kids are not that interested in it, but it's a Disney deal, so whoop-de-doo, right? So the theme is not like jump over my chair type of theme and just celebrate. But it's Lawler, so, and it's going to be creative, it's going to be interesting and mechanical, so I'm looking forward to the game no matter what. It doesn't matter. It would be a buy for me, especially secondhand, if it's Lawler. Mini are probably the same. His style's a lot different. He's not Lawler, but he's good. He's good enough. I mean, he's everybody's saying he's the best at JJP. I disagree, but he's still freaking amazing. He's creative, and I think the guy's got everybody's attention, you know? So, does anybody give a crap what Minier's next game's going to be? Does anybody believe it's going to be worse than GNR or worse than Pirates or better? I think it's going to be better. I think he's learning all the time. I think people will buy his game no matter what he makes. And now, that doesn't mean that it'll sell broadly and be mass appeal to everybody, right? So I think they're just gambling on theme to be the one that catches the extras. But the hardcore pinball people, they don't give a crap about theme. Iron Maiden came out. Everybody hated Iron Maiden's music. Everybody. I don't know, except for one person in my circle who was like, yeah, Iron Maiden's a good band. I love them. I was like the only guy, and then maybe one of my friends. And so yeah, it was a negative response to the game, but they saw the layout, they heard the sound, they saw the art, and it was like, who cares what the theme is? This looks cool, sounds cool, and it plays like an absolute dream. So would you buy a theme you didn't like? Iron Maiden is proof that thousands of people did buy a theme that they didn't like. Because I'm telling you right now, I've been to a lot of pinball shows and I've been to a lot of Iron Maiden shows, and those two crowds generally don't coincide. I'm telling you, I've seen a lot of people at shows for Maiden, and I've seen very, 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 very few people who show up at a show like Maiden who are showing up at a pinball show, all right? That's not a cross demographic. You're not checking two boxes with one game. They're definitely separate. So the game sold thousands and thousands. It's still in high demand, premium, pro, you name it, because the freaking game rocks, not because Iron Maiden is everybody's favorite music. Elwin's the real deal. People know that. So people are buying themes they don't like. They're saying, forget it, I don't care if this theme's something that doesn't really light my fire, I'm gonna buy the game because the game freaking rocks and looks cool. Sounds good. Pirates of the Caribbean, same thing. Wonka, same thing. I couldn't care less about the theme for Pirates, but I would buy the game if it was sort of reasonably priced. Wonka, a lot of people hated Wonka. A lot of people thought the movie was like stupid and dated and all this negativity. They're not that ubiquitous of titles. Like Pirates of the Caribbean has a transvestite Johnny Depp as the star. People have really mixed emotions about that whole franchise. It got played out, right? Wonka, same thing. It's just not as like generally loved as people think. Maybe outside the pinball community, but not within. Plus, let's talk about the integration. So the integration for Pirates and Wonka was pretty poor. There's not a lot of movie in the pinball. So, but did that matter? No, the game shot really well. The game sounded good enough and it looked decent. Pirates probably had a worse playfield art package than Wonka. And Wonka had a pretty bad playfield art package, but Pirates is worse. But anyway, my point is, the integration was terrible, the art wasn't very good, but the game played really well and really fun and had good enough rules to keep you really tied in for a long, long time. All right, let's think finally about this theme argument here. And I'll talk about a game released, 2012? Announced in 2012, right? Woz. Wizard of Oz. All right? If theme is the thing that matters the most, why would you pick Wizard of Oz as your theme? The game's from, 1960-something? 40 years or 50 years prior? Is that when that movie was released? It was black and white, I think. Anyway, it was really old, right? At least 50 years old. I think I'm not too far off there. So the theme was like dead in the ground. A non-starter for everybody. Me? Anybody in my generation? I don't know a single person between the ages of 30, let's say 30 years old and 45 who talks about Wizard of Oz when they talk about movies and great movies that they love. And I'm a movie lover. I love movies. Wizard of Oz, I think I saw it once when I was like 7 years old and I was scared. Not even in my mind, even it doesn't hold up, it's, you know, whatever. But the point is this, the movie didn't grip people and rein them in, it didn't bring people with their wallets and their cash ready to buy. What did it? It was the technology, the LCD screen, the RGB lighting, a really fun layout, 5 flippers. It was those things that brought people to purchase this game. And to line up and even wait 2-3 years to get their Wizard of Oz. It wasn't the movie. So let's temper our compelling argument here as far as the theme being the main thing, right? I just don't think it's valid. But I'll add the disclaimer that it is valid when it comes to everybody else, people who don't know pinball. But maybe that's the most important thing, because people who don't know pinball, who are now falling in love with it, are willing to buy new in-box games. So maybe that's the idea behind the marketing and the theme management here with the games that are being released. So let's talk about themes that are recent. Avengers Infinity Quest, I've already said it doesn't interest me. The theme is irrelevant to me. Jurassic Park, the theme is terribly integrated. It may as well not be Jurassic Park. It's a fun game to play though, right? Just like Avengers. Deadpool, I don't give a crap about Deadpool comics. The movie was kind of funny, I saw it once. But it's a fun playing game, it sounds fun, it looks good. So, there it is. If you think theme is really the thing, I think you're ignoring the fact that people look at the designers nowadays and say, that's a guy whose game I'm gonna buy. That's Minier, that's Elwin, that's Lawler. I'm gonna buy his games. And I think these days now, unfortunately, they're looking at Steve Ritchie, like the neglected stepchild of the bunch, like the over-the-hill singular designer from days of old who's still trying to hold water, and he's not able to. It's kind of sad. I think it is kind of sad, because nobody wants to watch somebody disintegrate in their professional life that way, and I think that's what we're looking at, and that's what Led Zeppelin represents. And I went off on it episodes ago, but that's what we're looking at. No one's dying to see Steve Ritchie's next title. Likewise, nobody's dying to see Scott DeNisi's next title. So there are the haves, and there are the have-nots in design for these companies. And it's obvious who the stars are. So I think designer, that's really it. That's it. So another note on Kaneda was talking about last week was DeNisi's doing sound for another game, not a design for another game. So that's what he's working on now. Evidently, it could be a CGC game. It's kind of interesting. DeNisi does do good music. It's kind of cool, and techno is pretty rad. So, and everybody loved it, you know. So, a lot of electronica fans in the community. Looks like Spooky's not doing Scooby-Doo. That's the little blip from Kaneda. Evidently, they're going to release a game in June, but it may be a collaboration with CGC. So, the Ben Heck project has been going on for 3 years now at CGC, and Ben Heck may very well have a release on his hands in this summer. Who knows? It could be his game. So that's what we know about June. We know Stern's next, May. Spooky's next after them in June. if they're not done with Rick and Morty. So, better crank it up. All right, that's the end of my notes, everybody. I have a little to-do list that I created for pinball today, and it looks very intimidating. I already told you about some of those items I have to work on, but we're talking like 20 hours of work, and I just don't know if I have it in me. But I'm going to keep going. I'm going to push. I'm going to make it happen. And, yeah, we'll see as soon as I can pull some glass off and get under those play fields and get things fixed. And get things finally fixed, right? So the arcade can operate at full strength. That's it for me. I'm going to head out. Got to go back to work, everybody. Thank you for joining me. This has been another episode of the Pinball and Cool Stuff Podcast. Y'all have a great week. God bless.